Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we have a few news items to touch on, including Goonies never dying, and plus reviews of The Unbreakable Boy, Cleaner, plus we say hello to the new Captain America in our Brave New World spoiler cast, plus say goodbye to Cobra Kai.
No!
That's a whole lot of things that just never die. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
I almost said mercy after she said no.
Oh, that would have been so good.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
John is, once again, he's on sabbatical, John Davenport, but you will hear him actually in this episode. He is joining me for Captain America, Brave New World, so we could talk because he loves the comics.
John left the house?
No, he was in the house. For that. Yeah, he did. I'm sure he went to his fancy theater. He just feels bad talking about it anymore because, you know, it's rude.
Well, you gave him shit for calling it a peasant theater.
He calls the one I go to a peasant theater.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
What did he refer to his as? Just the theater?
I don't know. Taj Mahal.
Taj Mahal.
It's ridiculous is what it is. Just ridiculous. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. We have a Facebook page that's pretty active as well. And we're on all the socials at The Hollywood Outsider or Bad Popcorn, whichever one you're using. I think we're on Blue Sky. I never really use it, but by God, we're there.
Wait, what's Blue Sky?
Exactly.
I can't keep track of these. There's too much going on.
The Pit was renewed. I don't know if... I think you guys are watching this, right? The Noah Wiley ER show that's not ER, but it's totally ER. So
not
ER
I.
That he's being sued by Michael Crichton's wife about it.
Yeah, that's why his name is Noah.
Jesus. What is that?
The Troy jokes persist.
I told you I wasn't on tonight. So it's like they're just going to be really bad ones.
You're on a dad high is what you're on.
Ew, you're drinking Aquafina. No wonder you don't feel good.
I like her performances.
It was the one that was free in the airport.
I like her performances. I do like Aquafina. She is fun.
She's great. Can you imagine just sitting around one day going, I need a name, and then you're drinking a bottle of water and you nail it first
and you're
time
like,
out.
That'll be good.
I think that works. Yeah,
I kind of like it.
Well, let's go ahead and hop in, guys. This is one I don't know how to feel. You know, when we put this on Facebook, let me tell you, the comments there were a little polarizing. I was astonished at all the negativity when just a week before people were excited about Goonies 2. But now that it's a reality, I don't know if people know what to think. But Goonies 2 is a go. There's actually a screenplay being commissioned. Steven Spielberg is going to produce it. It's official. It's no longer a rumor. We're going to get a Goonies 2. Now, do we want it and how do you want it to go? Troy, you're probably the biggest Goonies fan I know.
I'm more concerned about getting my royalty check since we actually did this already on Remake This Movie Right for the 35th anniversary.
We did. People should go listen to that episode. That's great. Maybe we should release that when we're gone sometime.
Re-release it and then they pull that for the script.
It's fine with me.
Steven Spielberg's like, that's what we need.
That's what we should do.
I should have listened to that episode before this.
You really should have, because now whatever.
Yeah, that would have been good. I should have done it, and then I could have claimed it as my own.
Good idea.
I know my idea was that they're like adults, and it's their kids that are like doing something now instead.
I think that's it's what we
They had to come back to town for some reunion or something, and they came back to the Goondocks. But I'm
only give hints, so they go listen to that episode.
Yeah.
Remake this movie right.
People love that when you don't tell them anything, and you just... Go well. Go listen to this if you really want to know.
Yeah, but no, I am stoked. I love the Goonies.
Are you worried? Legacy sequels, you know, Dumb and Dumber 2, Anchorman 2. There's a lot of wah, wah, wah in there.
Most sequels that like are just cash grab stuff. Yeah, those are bad. It's been long enough. So now the biggest question is going to be like, are the original cast members coming back? And if they do, then I'm in.
They are.
Let's just make Goonies for a new generation and the original cast members have nothing to do with it and it's just a completely different story, screw that.
I think Feldman's even excited about getting everybody back together.
Feldman. Okay, Amanda, here, I'll tell you something. I know you're
He just wants to run his mouth.
You're a little younger than us. He will do... Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Jesus. You say you're off. I say you're spot on. Corey Feldman has never met attention that he didn't want to invite into his house and massage.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay.
Just saying.
Is that the name of his new girlfriend?
Wait, who's the other one I'm thinking of then that grew up in the same era as Feldman?
Well, it'd be Kihei Kwan. Corey Haim? Or Corey. Yeah, Josh Brolin is expected to come back. I mean.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're all expected to return. And I'm assuming it would be very similar, Troy. They would be parents. Their kids would be getting into it. They'd probably be roped into another adventure. Maybe the kid, there's like a concurrent adventure going on at the same time. But a lot of people were against it. They're concerned about ruining their childhood. And I just got to say, how do these things ruin anything, really? I mean, you still got the original.
This is me getting excited for something that I saw as a kid that I can now show to my kids.
Exactly.
And it bridges generations and keeps things alive from that perspective. And that's a good thing because it gets families going to the movies together since we don't have a lot of family time in the TikTok era.
The ironic part about all of this to me and people being upset is sequels sell better than any original content.
It's true. Yeah.
That means people are physically leaving their house to go see the movie. And that's what's keeping sequels alive. So even though people say, I don't want that, are they going to go see it? Sure as shit are. So what is the point of sitting there and complaining? Why not see what the idea is, wait for it to come out, give it a chance? I know I probably sound very hypocritical because in the past I haven't always been so gracious, but I think there's a
beauty of the internet. You don't have to be all the time. You can be a total hypocrite and just move on and pretend like it never happened.
The internet's also angry now because you just told them that Ghostbusters 2 made money.
Don't bring that up. People are sour.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, we need to also recognize that this is a fun property that can be easily remade, whether it's doing a similar story, taking them in a different era, moving it to the parents, whatever it may be. Also sounds like Steven Spielberg is probably going to get some information from us that says, hey, royalties are due. But nonetheless, I think one thing that we have to do better at as a society is maybe not jumping the gun on assumptions and seeing the negative.
Are you Cartman all of a sudden? Like society? Respect society. My authority.
My authority. You like that? Yeah. He's trying to jazz it up.
Jumping the gun and having opinions and all that stuff. Like, have you met America?
Yeah. It's kind of like a social media experiment,
right? Corey Feldman's other girlfriend, by the way.
You're trying to make this work. I'll give you credit. You keep trying. You keep trying. But just so you know, Corey Feldman loves attention. If you ever doubt me, go Google his musical endeavors. It is worth spending some time on TikTok or YouTube or wherever you are. I'm not trying to make light of him. It's something. He's still doing Michael Jackson dancing too, by the way. Still.
Like Thriller or Moonwalk? Yeah.
Well, because he was always very good at it. He used to be very good at it. He made a movie called Dream a Little Dream where he did it throughout the movie. And it was great. He really was. And I think people applauded during that era. And he just keeps chasing that applause or something because he's still doing it.
I still think about that movie often. I should go back and watch that one again.
It's a good movie. I like it.
Yeah.
Had the Haim. Had the Coreys. The two Coreys.
Aww. Both of them
right there. Childhood.
When you say their names together, then it gets sad.
Not for me. I'm fine.
It's a good reminiscing time.
No. But didn't they both get molested?
Wow. Now I'm sad. I wasn't sad.
That's what I'm
now
saying.
I'm well, I didn't go there. You didn't have to go there. Yes, the industry is terrible.
I'm just saying it's sad. Whenever I hear their names together, when I hear them separately, I think about all the great work that they've done. But when I hear their names combined together, for whatever reason, it goes to the saddest part of their names being together because that's what the headlines were.
Okay.
License to Drive.
Well, that's a way to turn this. We're really like turning this all over the place. I mean, if you're thinking of a car, it's all over the road. Let's move on to He-Man. Okay. Because we finally have a plot description of Amazon's upcoming Masters of the Universe movie. And it sounds like He-Man's going to go from Earth to Eternia and learn to be a hero. If you remember the original Master of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren, he was on Earth most of the time, and it was terrible. There's a big complaint about that movie, and they've already released a couple screenshots you can find online of new Prince Adam walking around on Earth before he goes back to Eternia. But 10-year-old Prince Adam crashed to Earth in a spaceship and was separated from his magic power sword. Sounds like a euphemism. The only link to his home on Eternia. After tracking it down almost two decades later, Prince Adam is whisked back across space to defend his home planet against the evil forces of Skeletor, who will be Jared Leto, and I'm very, very sorry to have said that out loud. But to defeat such a powerful villain, Prince Adam will first need to uncover the mysteries of his past and become He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Does any of that get anybody excited? Because I loved He-Man as a kid. This is the opposite of what I want.
I was trying to remember like what it was about He-Man as a kid that we liked.
He was butt naked and he had a sword all over the place. Yeah, that was it.
Every young boy's dream is to run around butt naked with a sword in their hand.
And a diaper. Yeah, kind of.
Like, a diaper, yeah.
But when you're 2 years old, running around, yeah, that's kind of the dream.
Some kind of harness on his chest or whatever it was?
He did have a harness. Yep, he did. It's kind of like an X.
So many questions now. If Battle Cat is in here, then I'm totally in.
Battle Cat.
Battle Cat's the only reason to go see it.
All right. Well, lastly, a bit of news. Good news, bad news, a little bit. The good news
The bad news was that you said Jared Leto's playing Skeletor.
That was awful news. That wasn't just bad. Awful.
We all glared past this for a reason.
He ruins all my geeky enjoyment. He's just...
Does Skeletor wear a grill now? Like Joker?
Wouldn't that be funny? He came out... He had like a tattoo on his forehead, the whole thing. Why not?
Is it gonna be like a pre-roll before like those TikTok ads that you see, you know, with the Skeletor, like, remember, if you wear a grill on your face, it doesn't actually make you any popular.
We are getting a new live action Dungeons and Dragons series on Netflix called The Forgotten Realms from Sean Levy, who did Stranger Things, Deadpool and Wolverine, etc., and from Hasbro Entertainment. Now, this is based on an iconic campaign, I guess, setting and centerpiece of the actual Dungeons and Dragons universe, but this also kind of nods that we're never going to get a sequel to the Chris Pine movie, which is, you know, that's disappointing.
Don't say never.
I'm saying never. We're not getting one.
Just not going to happen right now.
Or
Goonies. Goonies came back 40 years later. Maybe
Goonies was also a hit and a classic. Yes. Established at its time.
It has both of those things. Way hit different. And a classic. Yeah.
This Dungeons and Dragons movie was beyond underrated. People have not seen it enough. People who have seen it really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Aaron, you and I and John too have talked a lot about how disappointing it was to see the effect of theater going at the time affect and the promotion that they did or the lack thereof for Dungeons and Dragons. Could have had a way better outcome if people had known about the movie in advance and heard all the positive praise instead of then it was all very reactionary. And that really cost us, in my opinion, the ability to have a sequel. But it was such a fun movie and they did a great job interjecting classic D&D characters and concepts. So I'm still very much going to give it a shot and see where this goes. But yeah, it's very sad and disappointing. We won't have a sequel to this one.
Do you know, you played Dungeons and Dragons. Do you know this campaign or it's not one you're familiar with? Amanda?
I'm familiar with it, but I haven't played it myself. I just know a little bit about it. But from what I understand with the Forgotten Realms, there's a lot of, I don't know, mythical. Well, all of them are very mythical and ethereal, but I think this is really where it starts to kind of tap into that a bit more. But yeah, it either way, like if you look at any of the Dungeons and Dragons stories and campaigns, they're so well established for film or TV shows, because you have your protagonist, your antagonist, you have like the different ups and downs of the story, you have action, you have humor, like all of those things are very integrated, plus a level of fear because of the monsters. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious what it will turn out to be and when we get more details on it too.
Do you want a more serious tone? I mean, it sounds like they're going to do it, I don't know, more of a Stranger Things kind of tone where it's serious, but there is humor. I would imagine if Sean Levy's involved. Are you okay with that if there's humor like the movie had?
Yeah, I mean, I still want to have depth to our characters, right? Like every character in D&D when you're playing the game has a very unique personality. That's the goal, is that you, yes, you have, like, let's say you're a bard. So yeah, you're probably going to be very comical and jovial, and you're, you know, you've got a musical instrument that you're playing, and that's what Chris Pine was in the movie. So I think it's only natural to have certain characters with those attributes. But the important thing is, depending on your race and your class, not every character is going to respond the same. Mm-hmm. So that's really important to understand the dichotomies of those personalities related to the race and classes, and be able to like add that properly into it.
All right.
Well, and I think the big thing with this in Forgotten Realm specifically is that it's been around since the 80s.
I think there've 60s. Five, I think that I think 60s, wasn't it? No.
Well, since the 80s, the new Forgotten Realms campaign guide, there've been five editions. So okay. 87, 93, 2001, 2008, and 2015 was the fifth edition when it came out. And what's happening with Forgotten Realms is that later this year in November, there's supposed to be a new adventure guide coming out with five new locations. Six? I think there's five locations. And it's actually going to be exploring those areas, and it has a little bit of Baldur's Gate 3 flair to it. So if they can bring in that Baldur's Gate 3 kind of concept into the TV show series, I think that's going to be quite interesting.
Yeah.
I don't speak whatever you guys just spoke, but I'm Ron. Happy for you.
I think people will be more drawn to a darker element of the story as well. If you think about how much of a hit Stranger Things has been, it's the characters, sure. It's the story, sure. But it's really like how fun and crazy it gets, and what's behind this. What is that, right? The mystery, the intrigue, the horror that comes with it. And that's so easy to pull and integrate for a D&D story.
Well, don't worry. If this doesn't work, they'll just keep running up that hill. You're welcome. Have a nice day. I'm out.
That's terrible.
Don't You're terrible. Out.
But it's time, right? You could do one of these things now. You had Wheel of Time, you had Stranger Things, you had Game of Thrones, you had Rings of Power. You could do a really good Dungeons and Dragons TV series at this point in time.
Let's go. I can't wait till it hits Netflix and they cancel it in two seasons. Yay.
Three.
Three seasons, you're right. Yeah. We'll give you a wink, wink, proper ending. Hey, our show is independently funded, therefore all of our expenses are from our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier, including we're going to record our 600th episode here soon, and it will drop first for Patreon supporters. So you'll definitely want to be there. And also, only Patreon supporters will get to ask special questions for that episode, which will be going up very shortly. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all content in your respective tier. Now that you understand what that is, if you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Thank you for supporting the show. Now, we've got some reviews, right? We're going to talk about them. We got The Unbreakable Boy, which is in theaters February 21st. That's the first one we're going to start with. Heavy. It's emotional. It's about a young boy with both a rare brittle bone disease and autism. But what makes him truly unique is his joyous, funny, life-affirming worldview that transforms and unites everyone around him. It's directed by John Gunn and stars Zachary Levi, Megan Fahey, and Jacob Laval. So, Amanda, you saw this. Again, it's in theaters February 21st, and I have a question, Amanda.
Just one?
This very much could be one of those movies where it's trying so hard to hit your feels that it stops being a movie and just starts being kind of by the numbers. Is it like that, or does it find its own rhythm? You know what I mean?
I do. And I would say that while it does have a lot of fun and happiness, and it shows different perspectives of primarily autism and the impact of having this brittle bone disease, and how that impacts and makes it worse to help manage and support a child with autism. But the thing that I really struggled with and I mentioned this too in my written review, is it doesn't feel like you really come away with, why was this family so important? Why was this story the one that needed to be told? More than anything, you come away, or I came away, feeling like Okay, great. I'm so glad that I got to learn a bit more about how it feels for a parent to be in that situation, or for a child, you know, seeing it through their lens. That was all really great. And that's moving, and it progresses our involvement with the characters. But beyond that, it just felt like, what are we doing here? Kind of what's the point? I know they wanted to show those different perspectives, but there wasn't, in my opinion, enough that was captivating to make it something more. It's not a bad movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's just one of those, it's a decent average flick.
So it sounds like the story is they're not driving toward a narrative point at the end. Like they're not trying to get to a destination. It's more of just a life in
it's the experience, the journey.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those. So do you feel like you're building to anything, or is it just feel like movie starts, you're in their life, and then it just kind of ends?
That's more so how I felt. I gotcha. And that's really where it has its opportunities and downfalls. When it comes to the performances, I know Zachary Levi has some, I've heard he's got some feelings around the opportunities and offers he's gotten, but this feels like a really good role for him. Because he not only gets to tap into that happy, fun-loving guy that he is in, let's say, Shazam, but he also gets to be the broken human father who's like, I'll just put it out there. Having a child with autism, I don't have a child with autism, but I've seen it. And it seems like it's a lot of work in addition to just caring for a child. And that's not something that you can overlook. You can't overlook that the parents of children with autism have to go to a different level than most other parents. And so you do see Zachary Levi's character start to kind of crumble in moments while he struggles with what this means for him as a parent. And so I do like that. You get good performances from everyone, but that was nice to see his different acting capabilities than what we've mostly seen in the past.
I'm glad they're showing the parent side of it. I've got a friend who has a child on the spectrum, and I know she's really had to, you can just see how much of a toll that takes, right? I hate to use that term because it's still your child, etc. But there's very much a toll that it takes on a parent too, because you have to be everything everywhere all at once. You're constantly involved. You know, you already have to worry about your child if it's your child, but this might take the rest of their life, you know, the rest of your life, certainly. So you constantly have to worry about this child, whether you want to or not. You're always having to parent. You never really get that full break that other parents get. And I think that's something that deserves to be.
And, showcased. The personalities just inherently are different. So not only do you have a child who more than likely, depending on, you know, their severity or where they're at on the spectrum and yada, 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 one of the things that is very unique or different is, one, autistic children have really high intelligence, very smart individuals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever had a kid even that you like worked with or were talking to that was really smart and kept getting ahead of you. I'm sure that is like tough as a parent to like have your kid one step ahead of you, like cognitively, intelligently. And then the other part
never
of
it
too
to
is
me. Nope.
Oh, whatever. The other part of it is there's a lot more, at least from what I've gleaned from this film and seeing some other family members that are autistic, just seeing how much more communicative some can be in terms of, this is my thought. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to ask why. I'm going to ask why. I'm going to ask why. And so that is a lot more for a parent to take on at times. So you're right. I think that's one of the best things about this film that I really liked with Unbreakable Boy is you do get to see through the child's lens of how different the world looks. You know, I'll give you an example, and it doesn't tell anything away. They're flying a kite, and instead of just seeing it as a kite flying through the air, you see from his perspective, you see that change into a dragon. And he's like, oh, I see a dragon. And it's like, wow, what an imagination, one that children have. But then to like see it in real time felt really cool. And then you have the counter to it, which is the parents' happiness and the struggle with how overwhelming it is. So that's one of the better pieces of the film. And I think what I really took away from it was understanding that. But again, it just comes down to why this particular family. And I bring that up because it's based on a real family. So why this particular family?
Gotcha.
Yeah. But I will say, you think about all of the things your friend struggles with or just has to overcome or deal with. It's also then this kid can't even walk and fall on his legs without breaking things. Oh, so how do you keep this kid contained?
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. And so learning about that condition, because it's a real condition, I don't know how to say it all the way, but it's like osteo something imperfect. Or something.
Oh, I learned about that in Glass, right? Same thing Samuel L. Jackson has.
Basically, yeah. Their bones can just break even from the slightest poor touch. Kid. So like several dozens of bones broken by like 4 years old. And so that's like another component to this story, is giving you insight into that. And I think it just kind of shows you that kids are superheroes, and so are parents.
They can be, as long as they're doing their job. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give The Unbreakable Boy?
I give it $5.50. Again, five is like an average film, so this one's still a good takeaway. It is more of a feel-good film, but it also has, and Aaron, I'm going to point this to you directly, It has less of the everything is happy family, nothing can go wrong, we're all together, oh, great, life is so wonderful. You do get moments of that.
Miserable family?
People are humans. People are real. To be able to see a parent not know how to feel or not know what to do, I think is really great to see that on screen.
Why the hell are you pointing at me?
You've talked about TV shows that you don't like, that are more about like the family is everything is happy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Peaches and rainbows and unicorns.
Because parenting is tough, and I need to see tough parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very much so. That's something that I love to see. And I with a kid with special needs, that I'm sure is very, very difficult. Like, that's where you test someone's mettle, so to speak. All right, now I move on to Cleaner, which I saw. So, Troy, you can lead me on this adventure.
Yeah, Cleaner is about criminal activists that hijack a gala taking 300 hostages. One extremist plans mass murder as a message to the world. And the next soldier turned window cleaner now works to rescue the hostages. Stars Daisy Ridley and Clive Owen. It feels like this could be a combo Die Hard Adventures in Babysitting situation.
Babysitting?
Because she's like the bad guys are trying to chase her down and she's outside the window just kind of hanging on there.
That was a reach I didn't see coming, sir. That was a reach I didn't see coming.
I don't know. Well, what about this one, though? I mean, is it Die Hard from outside the building?
I mean, number one, I'm really happy that there's so many vocational action roles these days. I mean, I thought Jason Statham was taking all of them, but at least, you know, Daisy really got one of her own. So instead of the beekeeper or the working man, we've got the cleaner. It's kind of Die Hard-y, I guess. It's definitely in that genre a little bit. It's directed by Martin Campbell, who did Goldeneye and Casino Royale. So the guy knows action. He's a very talented director. And this is I would say it's much more grounded in that the lead character is not able to just do all kinds of crazy things. It's much more in, I guess, the scope of what the first Die Hard was, where he wasn't Superman. He got hurt. He got wounded. He was just trying to deal with what he could deal with. She is an ex-soldier, her character Joey, and she is trapped outside when these terrorists take over the building. So like the first act is kind of really establishing her and her brother, because her brother also is on the spectrum, and she has to take him to work because her life's a mess. Like, you find out that her life is just not organized and it's a mess, and she's not really doing a very good job of taking care of her family. And so she's at work, she gets there late, so she has to work late to make up for it. And because of that, she's still out on the damn building when the terrorists take over. So you have the first half hour is that setup. Second half hour is kind of her trying to get into the building. And then the third half hour is her versus the terrorists. And I think it works really well. I mean, it gives you a lot of variety. There's a lot of different things happening. There's definitely some twists and turns. And I would say, I guess now that I've talked myself into it, it's a little die-hardy. Yeah.
But is it good action? She can wield a lightsaber. She can work on a green screen. But can she actually make this work as John McClane style?
Well, she's not trying to be John McClane. That's the thing. I mean, she makes it her own. She brings humanity back to the action hero role, which is something that drives me nuts when it's not there, because far too often these people are superhuman. I mean, do you ever really think Jason Statham could lose? No, you never think that. There are moments where I think Daisy Ridley's Joey's going to lose because she's outmatched, or she doesn't have the advantage, or whatever. And she's thinking more. She's using more common sense approaches to how to, number one, get into the building, and then how to address what's going on inside of it. And, you know, the police are outside. It's kind of the whole, she's talking to the authorities out there and trying to work with them while also coordinating this effort to bring down the terrorists. Yeah, I think she does a very good job. Daisy Ridley does a very good job with the action here.
What about Clive Owen as a villain? By the villain, or just villain for villain's sake?
Clive Owen is a good actor. It's a good villain. There's more at play, and there's definitely a few twists and turns with how he plays it, which I really appreciated. I don't want to say much more. I don't want to spoil it, but Clive Owen is, I mean, guy's a good actor. He handles his part very well. It's no Alan Rickman, though. Don't get too excited.
But overall, it was fun. Enjoyable.
Yeah, I had a good time. I really enjoyed it, because it's not just trying to be like a Jason Statham kind of movie. She's not unstoppable. She's definitely in danger for most of the movie, and she has to be quick when she can. Every fight that she's in feels like she could win, as opposed to it's ridiculous and, you know, how is she even still in it? Like, everything seems grounded and realistic. I do think the action scenes could have been amped up a little bit. Martin Campbell obviously has a history of making great action. I think there could have been more memorable action scenes, but Daisy Ridley, I think, definitely elevates the movie more than the action elevates her.
$10 full price of admission. What are you giving Cleaner?
$6.50. I really enjoyed it.
And it's not The Cleaner.
It's just cleaner. I don't know why they didn't just throw the in there, because then they might get some, you know, spare tickets from Jason Statham people who just thought it was one of his movies. Because they don't, you know, they're all kind of interchangeable at this point.
Probably already one that is named that way.
Probably. Now we're going to talk about Reacher. Amanda wants to get out of here before that. So, Amanda, do you want to be
the deal? I want to hear nothing and see everything.
I'm not going to spoil anything.
Reacher. No, I know, but I haven't seen all of season 2.
Jesus.
I'm behind.
You know, the beautiful thing about Reacher is every season is its own thing. You don't really need the previous season. It doesn't matter. No,
that's fine, but I like to watch it chronologically.
It's obvious because you haven't finished season 2. You just it's obvious. It's only been out for like a year and a half.
Before watch it in time travel and go back to the past,
apparently. Right?
Right.
Before I leave, I just want to say two things unrelated to Reacher.
Okay.
One, Cobra Kai had the perfect ending, the last scene, perfection.
We'll be the judges of that, since she won't be here.
Yep. And second, Mary Mouser still sucks as an actress.
If you want, do you want to hang around and we can have that conversation?
This is literally all I have to say. This is it. This is about it. And Team Johnny. I love Johnny.
Oh, my God. The end, right? We'll talk about it.
Oh, my gosh.
You got to wait. You got to wait. I don't want to spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen it yet.
We will not spoil nothing, but I just wanted to say
that. Once we get there, we're spoiling the shit out of it. It's going to be all about the end. Don't care once we get there. But right now, no, we won't spoil anything. Get out of here.
Goodbye.
All right. Debbie Downer's gone. So we're going to talk about Reacher now. You don't watch Reacher, right? Am I right about that?
I have not started the Reacher phenomenon, just because you were like, I just binge the whole season because I'm cool. I just binge the whole season because I'm cool. And at this point, I'm just being an Arjun or somebody and just being like, screw you, Aaron. I don't want to watch it now out of principle.
That's fair, I guess. I mean, it hurts my feelings a little bit.
I mean, I thought we were bros. And then you were like, no. Like, I'd rather go with the muscle. Troy's just, you know, second fodder now.
He's very handsome. He's a very handsome guy. Well, I will tell you, for those that want to see Reacher back on his own, season 3, I've seen all 8 episodes, which they start rolling out. I think the first 3 hit on February 20th, and then it's every week after that. Probably by the time you listen to this, Reacher will be out. Here's what I want to tell you about this new one. It's based on the book Persuader. If you don't know the story, you'll be happy to know, because a lot of people were concerned because in season two, he had a lot of his comrades for the whole season. He's back on his own. This is Reacher back on his own. It's kind of like the first season where he will get a little bit of help here and there from Neely, from Maria Stenz Neely, who's getting a spinoff, and I'm so excited about. But mostly, he's on his own. Now, this case, what I can't do is tell you too much about it, and I'm not going to. I wouldn't want to spoil it. But what I will say is he essentially gets caught up with a crime family, the Becks, and he needs to deal with a problem that's affecting that family. There we go. That's about the most I'm going to say. But Zachary Beck is played by Anthony Michael Hall. It's always good to see him, especially when he's playing kind of a tough guy, kind of a jackass. But, you know, as we go, you get a lot more of the character, of his character, of his depth, and a lot more of his relationship with his son, Johnny, Richard, who's played by Johnny Burchold, you know, and getting the full sense of their relationship. Most importantly, you get to see Reacher come up against a foe that is bigger than him. I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you know what I'm talking about. He plays Pauly. Pauly is somehow bigger than Alan Richson's Reacher. I don't know how, because Reacher's already a big dude. This dude's like 7'4" or something. I mean, he is monstrous. He's huge. And it's a great foe for Jack Reacher, because, you know, it's good that he comes up against someone that's a little bigger than him. So I can't really tell you much more about it because it's all embargoed, blah, 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 blah. What I will say, it's my favorite season of all three. This is my favorite season. He really has a lot more challenges here. I think Alan Richson really has kind of settled into the role. It's got a good blend of what you want to see from Jack Reacher as well as what you miss. For me, that's Neely, because I love Neely. And there's just a good collection of characters, great actors, and a cool story at play. I don't want to give any more of it away, but if you're a Reacher fan, get set. It's awesome.
I'm going to watch that one.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, because I don't have to watch the first two seasons. I can just jump right into three.
You can, but will you?
Yeah, sure. I'll jump into three.
I think you're lying to me. Before we go and say goodbye to Cobra Kai, we're going to say hello to Captain America, Brave New World. We'll be right back with Cobra Kai after that. All right, now we're going to talk about Captain America, Brave New World. There used to be New World Order, but then they had some reshoots, and they say the budget's $180 million. Some say it's $375 million. I don't know how much money is here, but it doesn't show in the effects. So joining me for this absolutely one not is John Davenport. See, you're not dead. You're just on sabbatical.
I'm not dead. I've seen some of the messages from people looking for me. I want to say thank you guys for looking for me. I will be back. I am just taking care of quite a few things that that have changed recently and trying to get myself resettled so I don't drive Aaron nuts.
I mean, you said it, not me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, being honest, like Aaron and I have a very good, loving relationship. But he hates the way I talk. So, yeah.
Well, when you say it like that, that sounds offensive. Just so you know, this movie about another guy who's just, you know, trying to deal with some things. This has Sam Wilson, the new Captain America. He was handed the shield in Endgame, and then he spent many episodes dealing with the mantle of that shield. And now he's got a movie where he does a lot of the same. But he's finding himself in the middle of an international incident and must discover the motive behind a nefarious global plan. And we're going to kind of give me broad thoughts real quick on what you thought of the movie and your score. And then we're going to jump into some spoilers. And you can always check timestamps if you want to jump ahead or jump behind or whatever. Because we do want to talk really some of the more complicated aspects to it. You got to talk about spoilers. So just overall, what were your overall thoughts and your score? If $10 is the full price of admission on Brave New World.
So overall, my thoughts on the movie is that it was well acted as far as the characters are concerned. It was perfect casting when it comes to a lot of the people that we saw on the screen. The thing I had the biggest issues with was how it was filmed and how the fight choreography worked out. Captain America needs to be somebody who's more mobile and fight engaged, I guess you want to say. But a lot of this felt like stage acting, and the way it was filmed took away every aspect of grandiosity and or fun in the fights. And it was very much like watching a TV fight. So my score is 550.
Okay. Very similar. I think Anthony Mackie is he can take the mantle. I have no problem with that. I wish he'd also take the serum, personally, because a suit can only do so much, man. I mean, you're fighting, well, it's in the trailers. You're taking on Red Hulk at different, how are you still alive? Honestly, it's just,
how are you not
it's
mush?
Just ridiculous, but it's a superhero movie, right? A lot of them are ridiculous. I'm not going to fault him for that. My problem with the movie, and I'll elaborate when we get more spoilery, is I think the villain is very weak. The story is obviously stitched together. I mean, I think it's well known that the movie was reshot quite a bit, but it's obvious when you watch it too. I feel like there's parts of exposition just missing in certain areas. The cameos don't hit as hard as they should, in my opinion, as hard as they have in past Marvel movies. And I agree that on the fight scenes, some of that for me is the effects, but also the fact that he's severely outmatched in every fight. But then there's also fights where he's fighting a henchman and he barely pulls it off. It's just like, come on, man, he's Captain America. I realize he's a different Captain America, but yeah. So we'll get into the more details of why I feel like that, like I feel, because I say $550 as well, $10 the full price permission. I give it $550. I will say if you go, you know, to the scoring sites, that the audience rating is higher. It always is for Marvel movies. That's not a surprise to me. Critically, it's around 50%. It fluctuates 48 to 51, depending on which reviews are getting added. But audience score is around between 75 and 85. It's been pretty consistent, which is good for Marvel movies. It's not great, but it's good. So now we're going to jump into spoilers. So anything you say after this point can be part of the movie. And we'll go from there as to what the issue was. Because I still say, yeah, it's entertaining. It's entertaining. It just doesn't rise above. You know, it's more middle of the pack. It's way better than Ant-Man Quantumania, which was terrible.
That's true.
It's way better than Thor 2, even though Thor 2 had a better critical score. Somehow, that was when people had the Marvel high. They were just giving everything pluses, right? Even when it sucked. I think people are just being a little bit more demanding these days. And
those Marvel red colored glasses?
Kind of, yeah. So let's start with Anthony Mackie. Is he any part of the problem here?
Absolutely not. Anthony Mackie is a very engaging and charming fellow in real life, as far as what I've seen in interviews and whatnot. As Captain America, he dials it back a little bit to be that charming, engaged person still, but he also has that earnest and caring that Captain America, I feel, needs to have.
Stoicism.
Stoicism. Yeah. He can still deliver a good joke and he can still deliver a one-liner that lands pretty well, but he is still very much a good example of what Captain America should be, especially his version of Captain America, what it should be.
Yeah. And God, and I hate that we live in a world where this is a thing, but I've seen this a lot online, right? Where if people critique him in any way, they're automatically branded racist. And it just drives me nuts because it's just like, just because he's black doesn't mean black is a major factor here. It shouldn't be. It isn't, in my opinion. He just has to stand up to the person that held the shield before him. And that was a great performance. You know, Steve Rogers was beloved by many, many fans. And he's a different take. He doesn't have the serum. He doesn't have the backstory, you know, it's a completely different character, blah, 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 blah. I think it's fair to compare him when it's basically, it's not a recast, but it is kind of, isn't it? I mean, it's, you're stepping into the shoes of someone who wore those shoes before, essentially. It's no different than when we compare Jokers, when we compare Spider-Man, etc. There's no difference there, in my opinion.
I can agree with your opinion, but at the same time, I find where it kind of lacks, right? Because it's not that Steve Rogers is no longer Captain America anymore, or that Sam is being Steve Rogers. It's that they're two different versions of the same character that have different ideology. Captain America, Steve Rogers, was very much about the American dream. That's what he represented. That's what he cared for. And you saw that, especially when it comes to Civil War, when he decides to go against the American government and break off and do his own thing because he doesn't agree with what the American government's trying to push. That is that idealized American dream of freedom and caring for one another, all that jazz, right? Sam is representing a version of the marginalized United States where he is caring about that American dream where we are all included again. But that's what a lot of what he's fighting is, the fight to make sure that we are all included. when people say, well, then Bucky should have been Captain America. Well, Bucky technically kind of is already, you know, he is that, but he's that, that hidden version of Captain America. He's the disillusioned soldier. He's the one who went and did gross things and has to really come back to be like that make amends thing. And he, so he is already that version of Captain America. And I appreciate him for doing that. But then you start looking at the other Captain Americas where people are like, okay, well, what about this Captain America? So sometimes people try to compare Steve Rogers to Ultimate Captain America from the comics, which he was militaristic and all about nationalism. Not really a great version of Captain America. He was very much like, what if we take Captain America and make him darker? And then from the show, you have John Walker, who is that flawed patriot who follows the rules over morality. So he takes duty and replaces morality with duty. So again, somebody who turns out to become more of a darker version. So that's where I get like, I like where they're trying to tell the story of what Captain America should be. Somebody who lives the ideology of hope and dreams and including people, all that jazz. And when you compare it to the people who are the militaristic or duty over morality, that's when you can start seeing the darker versions of what Captain America really is. I think I went into a weird tangent.
No, but it's fair. I mean, originally I started with, you know, because I see a whole lot of, if you don't like it, you're racist. And it just irritates me when people, that's the default answer. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, if your response is, I don't like it, Captain America got woke or something like that, that is racist. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to knowing who you are.
Here's your sign.
But if you're just, like, comparing the actual Captain Americas, I think that's a fair comparison. You have a new Captain America who's got different motives, like you just alluded to. And It's completely fair to compare those, just like it would be completely fair to compare Spider-Man, etc. And I do think, while I think the story let him down, Anthony Mackie was not the problem. I really do like his performance. He's a funny guy, just in general, let alone in the movie. I do think they toned his humor down a little too much for me, because that's who Sam Wilson is. But I also look at it, okay, he's wearing a bigger weight on his shoulders. So it makes sense that he would drop some of the jokes, because you can't just be cracking wise all the time when you're representing the world, not just America, but the world. I know he got a lot of flack for making a statement publicly about, you know, he doesn't just represent America. And I don't think there's anything wrong with what he said. It was reasonable if you really dive into it. He's just saying these values should apply everywhere. It shouldn't just be America. And he's right. But I think the story just kind of fails him. You know, I feel like half of the movie is a little bit of a rehash of what we already saw in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I realize they want to make sure that people that didn't watch the show can still enjoy the movie. But in the same token, well, that's the mistake you make when you make that your focal point of the show.
That's the problem when you do the same story twice.
Didn't you feel like that? There was a little bit of that?
There was a little bit of that. I, you know, the show was very much about him taking on the mantle, whereas this movie was very conflictedness. Like this movie was him still dealing with the conflict, and then people actually voicing their opinion about, hey, you're not Steve Rogers. Well, no shit.
I did like that. Like, they hit it right on the head. They just went right for it. You're not Steve Rogers. Yeah, no, I got it. I do say, you know, I feel like we got to briefly talk about the fact that he doesn't have the serum, and it does get kind of mentioned, you know, because at one point, doesn't he say, I wish I would.
Yeah, Bucky's wrong. I should have taken the serum.
That was a good joke.
That was a good joke.
I agree with Bucky on that one. I just think if you're going to be Captain America, it just seems unrealistic to fight the foes you're going to have to fight without having that advantage.
And, you know, and I agree with that 100%, because, you know, in a lot of ways, as far as inside the MCU, he represents the normal person who can become the hero, right? Who drives to become the hero. And you can see that in the fact that Joaquin, who's now the Falcon, idolizes him and is working his way up from being absolutely nearly nobody to being another person who is just a regular person doing extraordinary things. And that's kind of important, because for Marvel, the only people who were like that, either A, their superpower was being rich, Iron Man, or B, their superpower was that they were trained to be an assassin their entire life, Black Widow, or even Hawkeye. So, you know, it's nice to see that they are building up a character who doesn't have those sorts of darker backgrounds and those sorts of issues to become a powered person, let's just say.
Yeah, he doesn't have to get juiced like the other guy.
Yeah.
He's doing it natural. He's taking natural stimulants.
Yeah, he's on the vegan diet. He's, you know, totally, you know, I don't know if he's on the vegan diet. I doubt it, but it's funny.
What do you think about the Harrison Ford as President Thaddeus Ross to move into the other character? Because you've, and his Red Hulkness, and the fact that this is kind of also an Incredible Hulk sequel, even though William Hurt is dead.
Thoughts and prayers.
Okay. I'm sure he's listening.
I'm sure he's listening. Yeah, he's up there going, thanks for bringing me up. I love the fact, the line where he says, I shaved the mustache and that's why I look different. That's a great little throwaway line. The idea that it's Harrison Ford adds a level of intensity to that character and to Marvel as a whole, because I love Harrison Ford. The idea that we are bringing back Incredible Hulk things, finally after 15 years, great. I'm okay with that. I mean, with the exception of Abomination showing up every now and again in the last couple of years in TV shows, still I like it. I like how we should see that Red Hulk is not just another Hulk. He is a different version of Hulk.
What was really different? I mean, he kind of just did the same Hulk stuff. He smashed, smash, smash.
He was able to get hurt.
Well, so was Hulk eventually.
Eventually, it took a lot more. It took a lot more than a guy with wings on his back to hurt Hulk.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I was waiting for him to do. I was waiting. I really wish they would have. I kept waiting for him to do it, to do the whole thing that Natasha does to calm him down. Where she? I was waiting for that, but.
But you also see that he's a different version of Hulk, where he gives off heat. He burns his clothing off of him. He is. There is a lot more than just the random killer there or the random creature there, because you were able to talk him down, you know, you were able to get to him. You can't do that with Hulk, unless you're Natasha, which I get it, but you can't do that with Hulk where you're like, you know, oh, the sun's getting really low, big guy. No.
That's what I wanted so bad. So bad.
I like what we saw as far as a different version of Hulk. I like the leader. The leader looked great. I like I totally disagree with you on it.
We can fight on this one. But hold that thought, because I want to finish on Thaddeus real quick. They bring back Thaddeus Ross's daughter, Liv Tyler, Betty. And, you know, it's a cool cameo. I personally don't think it works well because her and Harrison Ford have no relationship on film before this. So to me, it doesn't have the same oomph as a lot of other Marvel cameos. Like the Bucky cameo, that was great. I think everybody kind of knew that was going to be there at some point. This was a fun surprise, I guess. But it didn't hit me at all because they have no relationship. So while they were acting strongly, and Liv Tyler, it looks like she hasn't aged in the last 25 years, by the way. Good for her.
Good for her. Money and science.
It is. She's got some of that Steven Tyler magic. But I don't. I just feel like it was kind of forced this time. Even though I love these cameos. This one felt a little forced to me.
I don't know. I really liked it when I saw her on screen. I was like, I felt it a little bit. I sat there and it was like, I saw her, I'm like, oh, she actually made it to the set today. That's awesome.
She's kind of been semi-retired, hasn't she?
I think she has been. The thing that I thought was weird was when he had the phone call with her before he turns into Red Hulk, and he's like, you know, we can walk through the cherry blossoms, and he's like, I love you. She goes, bye, Dad.
Yeah, that was cold. That was cold as ice, man. That was cold as ice. All right, let's move into the leader, who's Tim Blake Nelson and Samuel Stearns, right?
Mm-hmm.
You like that look? I thought it was terrible. He looks. Who put the big braid on Brad? You know, I mean, so ridiculous.
The only thing I wish we saw was the fact that he had blue skin, because the leader in the comics has blue skin.
It's a terrible design, any color that it may be. I don't. Maybe they wanted a green, so it made you think of the Incredible Hulk. I don't know, but it was a terrible design and a terrible character. I really didn't like his performance at all. What did you did? Sounds like you liked him as a character.
I liked him. I thought he was a
terrible
villain. I liked him.
Terrible.
Yeah, I as far as Marvel villains go, he's kind of in the upper quarter of that. As far as like you know, because Marvel villains
in the movies have always been
in the movies.
Oh, no, we're gonna fight. I wish we could arm wrestle this. Honestly, I mean, it's hard over all right, audio.
So top villain is always Thanos because they really crushed planned it. Thanos out.
He killed half the galaxy. Right? Yeah. Top yeah. that.
So, and then after Thanos, it's the one from Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Oh, him.
Yeah. It's funny how it's too bad we can't remember his name right now, but still so
he was villains. It's not really a strong suit of Marvel is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying too. Like you got Thanos. Okay, after that it's like maybe Loki, and Loki isn't even a villain anymore. And then it's like a whole ocean of people who are like, what was that guy's name?
High evolutionary.
High That's evolutionary, like, yes.
Jesus. Somebody was screaming that the whole time, by the way. Somebody screaming that,
you idiots, how do you not know it's high evolutionary? He was only in one movie, goddammit, get off my back.
Terrible at villains, that's why.
They really are. They've always been terrible at villains. So the leader is at least someone who's going to stick with you for a little bit because he's now been in two movies. And this one, he was, to me, somewhat interesting as far as what he was doing. And the way he was, like that Tim Blake Nelson voice, where it could go into like a Southern draw redneck kind of thing to being wildly intelligent. I really like that little bit that he does.
It was okay when he was in the shadows, right? I mean, a little ominous. Tim Blake Nelson is an actor that I kind of like, but also every time I see him, I'm like, you should just only be in Coen Brothers movies. There's just something about you that fits That's that fair. Aesthetic. he's just, once you see it with his stupid brain, I just couldn't stop giggling. You know what? And maybe it's because we've been doing a couple decades of comic book hero movies now. And so I really prefer the more grounded ones. And I think they were trying to make a more grounded one. Like they were going for a Winter Soldier vibe here, right? Like that's what they were going for. This character feels very much almost like out of Guardians of the Galaxy. It just feels like it's in the wrong world to me. Maybe that's my problem with it. It looks cheesy. It looks like it should have been in the Green Lantern movie. It's just bad. I was not a fan.
Somewhere.
Who was an awesome villain was Sidewinder. And why he got sidelined, it just pisses me off. He was a great villain.
Giancarlo Esposito, man. I love that guy so much. And he was somebody who was intense. He was good, and he not even like super powered, but he was just like ruthless as Sidewinder, and I was like, I was here for it. I was ready to see more of what he can do, and why they played him the way they did, I don't get.
One thing I loved is in my theater. This is how you know when you've created an iconic character, right? In my theater, when he showed up, there was people right behind me. Goes, I didn't know Gus Fring was in this movie, as if he doesn't have a real name. You know, he's just Gus Fring to these guys. And I love that. But he was great. And unfortunately, you know, he has a pretty good action scene with Sam Wilson, which I like that, where they're having the big shootout. And then he gets caught and that's it. That was disappointing.
I do like the that line of, if you break out, I'm coming to get you. And he's like, yeah, that's when I'm going to kill you.
He's pretty badass. I like him.
Yeah.
What else? What other characters are worth talking about? I think Joaquin Torres, Danny Ramirez, I think he's worth talking about. He was a fun addition. He's basically the new Falcon. And I like Torres a lot. I think it definitely has the same kind of feel that Anthony Mackie had in the Chris Evans movies, which is nice. You know, you have that compliment. Did you like him as the addition?
I liked him as the addition. I liked him from the show too. In the show where he's trying to like, you know, can I be yeah, Falcon now? Can I do this? You know, and he finally got his spot. I thought a lot of that is great. And I do think, especially unfortunately for Sam Wilson and Sam Wilson being Captain America, he needs backup. That nothing proved that more than this movie.
That's true. It's just sad. It's true.
He can't do it by himself, and I'm sorry, Sam, but you can't
take the poison.
Take the poison. That's But I like Joaquin, and I like the fact that he was this tech guy who was able to kind of keep up with everything. And he was Captain Exposition when it came to a lot of things. He's the reason why we know that Sabra was somebody who is a Red Door widow. Mm-hmm. And that was very cool. I don't know if I like that character, but I like the fact that we found out more about her from Joaquin.
I think we'll get more in future movies, and I'm sure we'll get another Captain America movie, not just the Avengers. I think we'll get another Cap movie. This should be successful enough, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's actually right up there with the second highest grossing weekend for a Captain America movie.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for sure.
Yeah. So, you really can't compete, like have an issue with it. It's making the money it should be making as far as a Captain America movie is concerned. But I think that it's the weird conversations that I think the people are having about it was where they're trying to make a political statement, and it doesn't need to be a political statement on this movie.
Not everything has to be political. That just drives me nuts that this is coming out right after, we have a new president and da da da. Like, keep that crap out of it. Keep it out of it. I don't need that in my movies, and it's not just because there's a president here doesn't mean they're trying to make a political statement. I really just don't see it as that. What did you think of Shira Haas as Ruth Bat-Serif? She's like the Black Widow-esque character.
Yeah, so she's a legitimate character from the comics. She's Sabra. She's a Israeli character. As far as her depiction, I thought she was interesting, but I don't know. It didn't land with me as well as I had hoped it would.
She's too tiny.
She is way too tiny. But she's supposed to be in the comics. There's like two different versions of her. There's a version of her that's depicted as a mutant, so X-Men-esque. And then there's a version of her that makes her more of a super soldier, where she is somebody who's taking the serum. So it's going to be interesting as far as where they take her, or if they even continue with her storyline. But way tiny of a person. It was distracting how small she was.
Every time she got in a fight, I'm like, it's definitely a stunt double, because that person's 5 inches taller than her by far.
That's a whole foot more.
That's a whole other person. Is there somebody on her head?
But I like how she reacted to Bucky. That was pretty funny. He's 110 years old. I can work with that.
And I was happy to see Bucky, because I mean, they do have a great bromance, and I love to see when they're together. So I'm glad that they're together, and I really hope Cap shows up in his movie too, in Thunderbolts later.
Yeah, that would be pretty great. We got to remember, like, the two of them started their relationship kind of adversarial, like trying to compete. Absolutely. Trying to figure out who's the better Steve Rogers friend.
And fighting for besties, yeah.
Yeah, fighting for besties. And the two of them end up becoming, and this was great about the TV show, where it becomes this buddy cop, show, where the two of them become best friends on that show. And so it's great to see that they carried that over. It's great to see that they're evolving Bucky to be more than just the Winter Soldier, or even, the darker version of Captain America. It's great to see that he's becoming something more. I can't wait to see him in Thunderbolts. I can't wait for Thunderbolts in general, because I just love Miss Pugh.
Yeah, Florence Pugh. Yelena?
She is great. I sort of wish that she showed up in this at some point.
Would that fit? Would that make any sense? I mean, well, does it have to? We got Red Hulks. You don't have to make sense.
Yeah. You don't have to make it. Yeah.
I will say I wish Isaiah Bradley had a different arc. Carl Lumbly, he's a great actor. He really is. And he's still, I mean, even though he's up there in age, man, he's still handling his business. I love, that was the biggest surprise in the whole movie, where it turns and he's trying to take out the president. I'm like, oh, snap. I did not see that coming. That was a good turn. Unfortunately, it's very similar to his previous arc in a way, but I think they really kind of played into that, and they made that work as well as they could. I just wish we would have gotten more of Isaiah Bradley, because I just think it's a cool character.
I think it's a cool character too. It would have been great to see more of him. It sort of makes sense why they sidelined him the way they did. Like, they gave him this big action packed moment, and then they go ahead and again, this is one of those moments where they're like, we did this on the TV show sort of. So here we're going to do it again to make just drive it home.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as we wrap this up, I do want to come back to, I talked about the effects, right? You talked about the stunts a little bit, and I agree. There's definitely, I do think it's creative in terms of what they do with the wings. There's definitely some creative fights going on. There's also some ridiculous ones where he's literally taking punches. He should not survive, no matter what his suit is. Even if he does give a grimace when he gets up, you know, oh, that hurt more than I thought, you know. I think Mackie plays it off as well as he can. My problem with some of the fights were kind of more with the effects, because there are definitely different times where I'm like, those look like TV effects. They do not look like you spent hundreds of millions of dollars on this movie. And I don't mean the Red Hulk. Red Hulk looks great. It's just more of like in certain fight scenes, it looks kind of cheeky a little bit, a little uncanny valley a little bit.
I get it. I agree with you. The thing that I kept on finding myself thinking about was the fact that these people are trying to be the Russo brothers,
mm-hmm.
and they're not pulling it off. It's a bad facsimile of the Russo brothers. And that's what really drew me out of it when it came to the action and the scenes, because the Russo brothers, I don't know what kind of like devil Faustian devil deal they made, but they just show up out of nowhere and they start making these sorts of like really engaging, really grandiose fight scenes with normally powered people, and it makes sense. And that's these people couldn't pull that off.
No. And the director was Julius Ona. And I'm sure that he did everything he could to make this work. You know, it is a very, very difficult, you know, this is a director who did Cloverfield Paradox and Loose. I mean, he's done smaller movies. It's always hard when you have a director who's going from the small, more independent screen to really a massive motion picture like this. And I know Marvel manipulates a lot of the pieces, right? You know, that's probably why they want people less established, so they can say, we want your vision, but not really, you know? And I feel like there's a little bit of assembly going on that isn't anything to do with him. I think he's just, you know, making the best of what he can. I don't even fault the director for what I don't like here. And it's nothing that I really, quote, don't like. The thing that drives me nuts when you talk about a Marvel movie is if you don't love it, you hate it. And it drives me insane, because it's okay to just be okay. Okay is fine. It's decent. You know, it's where a 5 lives. That's okayville.
Yeah.
Hate is a 1, a 2, which rarely happens with a Marvel movie. So, you know, I would give Quantumania probably closer to that, because I've rewatched it since I saw it, and now I think I do hate it. It's just such a terrible movie. I gave it more of a pass the first time I saw it. I'm like, oh, this part was okay. Now that I've seen it again, I'm like, God, that was the worst Marvel movie. It was just so terrible. Absolutely terrible in every way.
I don't think I've watched it since I saw it in the theater.
It'll make you mad that you spent more time trying to. It's one of those things where it's like, well, maybe I was too harsh on it when I watched. No, I was too nice to it. I was too nice to it.
You know, the thing that I've noticed recently is that I'm not watching Marvel movies as much as I used to. And I'm not even buying the Marvel movies as much. Because I used to buy every Marvel movie, sure. Because I was like, I'm going to want to watch this again. But I'm not running to the store to like replenish my Marvel movie collection. I'm not doing it. It's just, I'm not as driven to do so. I'm more, you know, actually, I was about to say I'm more so likely to do that with DC. But even then, I'm like, all right, well, after Justice League, the Snyder Cut, I don't give a shit. So like,
fair.
I agree with you. It's okay to be okay on some of these movies. Going back to whether or not you blame the director for this, and you're just like, it's just the machine. I think that's what the problem is that it's just a machine. It's just you can find where in that machine they're trying to reincorporate things they've done before, but they're not doing it with the creative team that did it before. They're doing it with like, oh, let's just follow this same track, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I think they need some continuity help, really. And I think they used to have a continuity team at Marvel, and I don't know if they still do, but that used to help keep things in place. I'm sure they must still have them, but I don't know if they're doing the same job that they were before. But overall, it's an entertaining enough movie. I am happy that people that really loved it. I'm glad that people liked it. I'm sorry for anyone that hated it. We're definitely not in that camp. We enjoyed it enough. And maybe it'll be one of those where it grows on us with another viewing or something. It wasn't bad by any means. It just didn't blow my socks off. And I'm sorry. It's hard to step up to Steve Rogers. I think Anthony Mackie does his best. He deserved a better story. Hopefully he'll get another film to kind of demonstrate what he's really fully capable of. And I'm sure Avengers will be part of that.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's saying hello to the new Captain America. Now it's time to say goodbye to Cobra Kai. All right, Troy, we're done with Captain America. It's just you and I again, and it's time to say goodbye to Cobra Kai.
Oh, I'm sad.
How do you feel?
I'm actually sad.
I should preface this. Okay, we're going to talk totally spoilery. So if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. I'm not going to hold anything back. We love this show. We want to just talk about our feelings of the end of the show, like a real conversation. So how'd you feel, man? I cried. I cried so much. More than a grown man should ever admit to.
Did I cry?
You watched this on a plane coming back from Arizona, right?
I was pretty tired.
See? Mistake. You got to watch it at home, man. Like, comfortable.
Because I needed to get it done so I could talk about it today before I got spoiled when I got back on the internet and stuff.
Yeah, spoilers are everywhere, by the way. They are everywhere. Yep.
I definitely cried in the sequence. There's one episode. Aaron's like, this is the best episode ever. And I was like, okay, Troy, calm down. There were two times in that episode where I was kind of like, oh, nostalgia.
This is episode 13.
Right? Three from the end. So three from the beginning. Right in the middle.
Yep. It's where Johnny and Kreese have their talk.
Yeah.
And he's I loved you, man. And
then LaRusso has the best dream nightmare ever.
Let's talk about the Miyagi dream. Before we'll come back to John and Kreese. That episode has a ton of awesome in it. And that's definitely part of it. I don't like dream sequences. I hate dream sequences. I guess it's the only way that they could get him and Miyagi together, which is what they wanted. And then they get to have a fight. And of course they're fighting the skeletons and da da da. Why did you love it?
For me, it was just that callback to like the original where Daniel's son would go sit in the house or whatever in front of Miyagi's photo. And he would just meditate and, you know, ask questions of his sensei, and just to see him on the porch with the sanding paddles, you know, just starting to sand the deck, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, like this just brings me back to 1984. Like instantly I'm this kid again, trying to figure out like what the hell to do with my life. And like, I understand Daniel's plight in that moment. And then when the whole thing goes down and the skeletons show up and you're just like, is this a dream? Are they actually attacking the house? Cause it transitions into the sequence. Like it's like normal. Like you mm-hmm. don't think he actually went to bed. Like you think he just went outside. So when this is all going down, I'm like, what is going on here? And then when he finally wakes up after it's all done, you're like, oh, it was a dream. Okay, this makes sense. But yeah, no, the sequence of the fighting, I thought was really cool. Like when you got those over the head shots and you could see how the moves that Daniel was doing was being the opposite. Like Miyagi was doing the opposite of Daniel. So they danced together in such a creative way.
Mm-hmm.
That like that movement and that choreography, I thought was just this like, oh man, like I miss the Miyagi Daniel connection. Like I felt it in that moment, even though when you then finally see Miyagi face to face and you're like, gosh, that does not look like Pat Morita at all.
Pat Morita? No, it does not. Nope. It's very uncanny valley. And
Pat Morita. Yeah. I don't know if they like used an actor and then tried to facial tweak it or if they got close, I'm not sure, but it is a little creepy, but the realization of what you get in that moment, you go back to the original movie when Daniel's on the table, which by the way was very it was almost exact, I do believe, the Robbie Keane sequence and then Daniel being on the table, it was the same thing. It was the one guy like, nice job son, and then two other people walk out. It was like the exact same, like how that all went down was exactly the same as the 1984 movie. But in that scene is when Miyagi goes like, win or lose, no matter, you know, so to come back to that pivotal moment, because in the 1984 movie, when Daniel's son realizes that he doesn't care about the trophy, he just wants to do it for himself because he wants to make sure he is solid and has balance in his life. And that's why Miyagi agrees to heal him in the movie, is because Miyagi realizes Daniel finally gets it. So then have that be the pinnacle moment here at the end of Cobra Kai, that Daniel realizes that win or lose doesn't matter. And it's really about walking away from the fight is really what Miyagi was trying to teach. Like it's pretty powerful to connect the two movies together, I thought, or the TV show and the movie, not two movies.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it. That was probably, I liked it, but it did feel very fake. Very,
it felt forced.
It felt Leia and in Rogue One, man.
It did.
Very much to me.
Like the concepts they were trying to go for hit the mark. Seeing his face, not so much.
Yeah. But what did happen, I mean, don't get me wrong, I guess we should mention, right? Because Quan died in the second set of these episodes.
Yeah, which was the finale of part two.
It was a big shock. And I guess I should ask you, did you, now that we've gotten to the full run of these episodes, don't you think five at a time was kind of bullshit?
The first 10 episodes could have gotten released together, I thought. And really, I think the first five of part one was really kind of fluffy, to be honest. Like there's maybe one or two episodes in there that really could have been part of the story. So I really think you could have done a very solid 10 to 13 episode season and not done this three-part concept. Because, I mean, all the parts, like it was 2.5 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Like it felt like it was just three mini movies and I sat on my couch and just blew through the whole thing and then I forgot about it. So there's not a lot of buzz being talked about. Like Netflix could have done a 13-week release on this week after week after week and you would have gotten a lot of people talking about it and going back and binging the first five seasons in between the weekly releases. So I think they could have done a completely different release concept on this.
Well, that's why I didn't watch I watched the first five and then I'm like, I'm not doing this again. Like I'll just wait until the whole thing's out because I thought it was a pain in the ass. And I've actually managed to avoid all spoilers. So I think that's a factor because I think people didn't watch it or there wasn't a lot of buzz on it because there were still five more to go and people just weren't talking about it, which Quan was a huge surprise. So I was expecting that was spoiling everywhere, but it wasn't. I remember
being at the end of that going like, that's where it's going to end. Like what? Seriously?
But then you get to, again, it's the 3, 4, 5 of this final season. It's the 13th, 14th, and 15th. Those three episodes are, as far as I'm concerned, even though I go a little bit on the Mr. Miyagi thing, I would say those three episodes are fucking perfection. Like absolutely perfect. The way that three ends though, so we can finally come back to it. John and Kreese, when they have that talk where he's like, I loved you, man. And they actually finally, like, he says everything. That is the best performance of anybody in this entire show, the entire series. William Zabka just crushed that whole scene. Crushed it. Broke my heart because I felt every ounce of that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a conversation that I think people have been wanting to hear ever since Karate Kid 2 came out.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
What happened to Johnny after that? Like, what happened to, everybody asked that question. What happened to Johnny? And we never heard about it until Cobra Kai came around and we're like, oh, here's what happened to Johnny. Now let's go on this ride. And it's a great ride.
Well, and we've had a lot of this, I mean, almost cheesy villain shit where Kreese is doing all this ridiculous stuff and he's constantly puffing his chest out. He's Martin Cove can overact with the best of them. He really can. And, you know, I think that there's a lovely aesthetic to how he plays John Kreese because it's just borderline soap opera. He so wants to go full cheese. And I think the creators like, just dial it back. Just stay in the 80s. You don't have to go full 80s. You don't have to do the cocaine. just get close. That was the first time. I mean, well, I guess there's been a couple moments in the series, but that was really like the most humane, human, emotional moment of John Kreese's whole filmography. Like everything that he's been a part of. That was really the first time where he seemed like a fully fledged actual person.
I think he had a few moments with Tori in season 2.
A few, but this was like, you finally saw he finally learned his lesson. They were trying to do that whole redemption arc this last fight for a lot of characters, right? Everybody but Terry Silver. Terry Silver got no redemption at all. But because they had that moment, that beautiful moment, even though Johnny apparently never finds out that Kreese died, you know, so that's kind of a mystery to him. So he never really gets that, but he gets Cobra Kai back. He gets to have that conversation. And it just, everything about that just broke my heart. It was such a beautiful, beautiful performance, beautiful scene. And proved once again that William Zabka is the star of the show. And I was so glad that they brought it back to focus on him because I love Ralph Macchio. This show is more interesting when William Zabka is a focus of it.
Well, I mean, the show was called Cobra Kai, so you knew that it was going to be focused on Cobra Kai as the dojo, whether it evolved, whether it went back to its roots. I really love the fact that we actually got to see where Cobra Kai came from in the whole Vietnam War era, Korean War era. in bringing it back from that perspective and introducing new characters because of that perspective, which leads obviously to Quan's death when you get the backstory. So there's a lot here that I thought they did really, really well. I thought, you know, coming into season two and introducing the characters from Karate Kid 2 and then having characters from season three come back to Karate Kid 3, I thought that was like a great way to say, hey, these three movies were pretty big back then, but to have the fan base that's installed to be able to do a six season series and pull back on that nostalgia and introduce new story arcs for them. I mean, obviously the absolute perfect executive producer, writing, casting, like all of that just worked for this. I mean, they just hit a gold mine, and I don't know if you could do it again as well as Cobra Kai pulled it off.
Most of the casting.
Yeah, there's one or two that are like,
I'm with you, Amanda. Mary Mauser as Samantha, weakest of the main cast. I want to love her. I know I've heard Ralph Macchio speak that relationship is the most important one to him as an actor. I'm sorry, Ralph, man. I just do not think she has the oomph she doesn't have the gravitas to pull this off. Every time she was fighting, it was just like, oh, come on. Like when Tori's fighting, you're like, yeah, she's done. She's getting it done. Mary Mauser just never had it. You know, I don't wish her ill will. I know she tried her best. It just, you know, she was upstaged by a lot of the other kids.
Well, and it was a lot of focus on her relationships, you know, relationship with Miguel, relationship with Robbie, relationship with the guy and the Iron Dragons, right? When they were in Barcelona.
That was the weirdest relationship. I mean, they walked on a beach one time, you psycho. Get over it. Jesus.
Piling over a woman he'll never get. Because his coach slaps him in the face.
But then we do get, I want to go through some of kind of the character arcs here, like the really cool ones. So you do get Eli, Hawk, and Dimitri. They go off to school together. So that's a cool ending for them. I'm happy for that. I feel like everybody got a good ending except Terry Silver.
And the reconnection they get during the final five episodes of how they're building the AI simulator robot to help Robbie train.
Yeah.
So they're bringing their like skill sets together to kind of like do one last project before graduation. I thought that was cool.
Even though I don't think AI would ever work that well, but good for them. They tried, you know, they're so smart. I like the way that they end. I really, you know, Hawk is just a great character and he's really come full circle. So I appreciate that. Dimitri, I feel like is the same character, except now he knows karate.
And he has a cute girlfriend.
And he's got a gorgeous girlfriend who was kind of like the lead mean girl at the beginning of the show. Kenny Payne got to come back and got a little payoff. I feel like they forgot about him.
Totally forgot about Kenny Payne.
the third five episodes. I'm like, where did he go? He was such an important, like, we got to go back. We got to get the Payne. They get him back. And then suddenly like, all right, we're good. Okay. Well, we don't need you for the next five episodes. I mean, he shows up, I think, in like a couple scenes, but he is an afterthought.
Yeah. It was a pure driver for Daniel's son and that whole relationship between Daniel's son being left out of the conversation because he wasn't always good in karate. So it was a way to kind of bring that to the forefront to fill basically season four, five. But other than that, yeah, Kenny wasn't a huge factor in the show, unfortunately.
He was not. Then we've got Robbie Keane, who I thought this was a cool arc because I think most people expected him to get that whole warrior ending where he gets to come out and beat the Iron Dragon dude's ass. But instead, Iron Dragon pulls a move that Johnny Lawrence would be proud of by cheating. You know what I mean? And breaks Robbie Keane's leg. Now, what I like about the arc, I don't know if you felt this way, is that you could tell how much difference it made to have a healthy mentor in his dad. Because his dad, you know, he did merge into a healthy mentor, as well as LaRusso. I keep calling him Danielson. LaRusso was a good mentor. So when he got his leg broken and it took him out of, and it, you know, you would think that it would ruin him like it did Johnny Lawrence, right? That losing ruined his life. As far as he didn't put the same stock in it. He's like, no, I learned that karate is giving me everything good in my life. And I like that kind of flip on the arc to some degree.
Yeah, it really shows growth from where he was like the bad boy in season one and really gave him a full, complete journey through the entire six seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And then who else we got? I want to make sure. Well, Kreese and Silver, I got to say, I know it's Dallas, you know, how they went out. But the fact that they're on that boat and they're tussling and you've got that supreme arc from that cigar butt. But the fact that he's like, nerd!
And then he finishes it, mercy. And then the thing blows up. Every bit of me was like, this is the cheesiest thing ever. And I'm like, yeah, so awesome. Do you feel the same, or am I just ridiculous?
I'm really standing up with a smile on my face, applauding, and I'm just like, I can't believe that just happened. But it works. This is the only place where I'm going to allow this to actually fly.
It was so good. So, and somehow I still think Kreese escaped that one, because he just always finds a way.
I'm sure he did.
What did you think about Daniel saying Cobra Kai never dies? I mean, the gi is one thing. We'll get there in a second. But just saying the words, Cobra Kai never dies, to Terry Silver, that was huge.
I think that was good, because that's a complete redemption moment for Daniel from back in Karate Kid Part 3, the movie, because he was afraid of Terry for a long time. So to be able to stand up to the bully really shows Daniel's growth, to say like, hey, like, you're not going to rattle me anymore. Like, we got a plan. We're gonna stick to the plan. I didn't even try for that one. That's terrible.
Oh, sorry, Stewie.
I'm gonna rattle you, bitch.
Oh man,
it's good. No, it's a good redemption arc to say like, Terry, I finally got one up on you, and you're gonna be like really pissed when you find out what it is.
Oh my god, I love the look on his face. Thomas Ian Griffith is underrated. He is the best villain in the show. I know everybody like Kreese is over the top.
Villain. No, Kreese isn't a villain. Kreese is a misunderstood character.
And he's over the top. Like, I love Martin Cove, but he plays it way over the top. Thomas Ian Griffith is a goddamn villain. Like, that mofo, he's the only one that I was ever afraid of. Kreese, I figure anybody could outrun him. Any of the kids, even Ralph Macchio could outrun him in a fight, I'm sure. Thomas Ian Griffith is a big, tall, you know, fairly muscular dude who actually knows karate. He knows martial arts. He's an accomplished martial artist, so he could have just wiped the floor with everybody but, you know, Johnny Lawrence, I think, if he really wanted to.
Stingray could even beat Kreese.
Let's slow down on that. I don't know if he even knows karate at this point. And then you've got Miguel Diaz, Zillo Maraduena. Yeah, I hope I said that right. But he is, honestly, just of the young cast, he's my favorite. Of the guys, I really love Tori. I think she does a great job. Peyton List does a great job with her. But Miguel gets to come out and go back to Cobra Kai and also run away with Sam for a little bit. So did you like his ending? Did you like that they came back to Cobra Kai and kind of gave them that send-off? I was a big fan of that.
Absolutely. That's where the show started, with Miguel coming into Cobra Kai and working under Johnny, and then coming back to that spot at the end where you'd be under Johnny again as a Cobra Kai uniform. I thought that was a perfect wrap-up.
And coming out to Thunderstruck with Tori back in uniform, it's just like, oh my god! And then Johnny Lawrence comes out after it, and I mean, I fanned out all three episodes like a total dork. Just like total a total dork. Dork.
Total dork.
I felt like I was a little kid again. I'm like, oh my god, this is so good! So
it's weird, because you would think like, why am I cheering for this? Like, it's supposed to be Miyagi, but no, it doesn't, there's room for everybody. It's about being a good teacher and being a good sport and enjoying karate for what it is, defense.
And we should mention, well, I guess Chosen ends up with Kim Da-un.
Yep.
Which is nice. It's nice that they kind of run off and have a little romantic dojo together.
Yeah.
Do you like that ending for him, since he didn't end up with Kumiko?
Kumiko, because Kumiko, right, and Daniel still had a thing. So it was like, was Chosen really going to win there? I don't think so.
He was hoping.
Chosen got his face pounded in. Yeah, that's when Kumiko was like, "Nah, he's not the guy."
All right. Well, I'm glad that worked out for them. I actually like that character, both characters. But what about, you know, I know we got the Iron Dragon dude, and you know, good for him. And Mike Barnes had already kind of had his ending in the previous season. But you've got Raina Vallandigham. I hope I said that right. Who plays Zara? And I think it's worth noting that she's a 13-time world champion. 13-time
world champion taekwondo.
Yeah. She could beat some ass, I'm sure, if she really wanted.
And she's only 22 years of age.
She's been,
so that means she's been like 13-time world champion, like as a kid, like just kicking ass.
I think she said she started karate when she was 2 or 3 or something like that. Like, just as a
4-degree black belt.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Insane. But she was actually pretty good. I thought, you know, for being her really kind of a breakout role and whatnot, she did a very good job.
Yeah, I love how she played into the whole social media thing and played into the crowd, and really did the whole like campaign thing throughout the entire Sakatekai. And it just, yeah, it was an interesting character that I thought we could have gotten a little bit more between her and Tori with the whole Robbie love tryst thing. Like, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more between the two of them.
Now, what did you think about Amanda Russo, LaRusso? I don't know why I keep going to Russo.
I felt like she did really great as like the mom heart of the show. Like, when she needed to care about the kids, she cared about the kids. When she's worried about Daniel, she's worried about Daniel. When she was like, you guys are so stupid, I'm just going to take over and be power boss mom.
She was great.
I thought she was the hype sports mom.
Full on sports second mom. Second last episode. Yeah.
Full on sports mom. Little crazy over the top, but it was fine.
That was good. That was fun.
That's for most of the series. She's like, oh my God, karate again. Oh geez, karate. Can't you boys stop fighting?
Finally.
Now she's like, karate's the best thing ever. Oh my gosh, I love it.
Well, I think it was because Danielson finally said, I'm out. You know, Miyagi-Do doesn't need to exist. We can do our own thing. We don't have to be the best. We can.
Oh, so she was actually cheering for the fact, like, I never have to see this shit again.
I think so. I think that was part of it. You know, I think she knows. Well, she said she knows it's always going to be a part of him and whatnot. But right. I think she could see that, okay, the stupid stuff is done. He finally put that to bed. He's ready to go on and hang out with Jackie Chan in a different spinoff movie. You know,
I'm excited for that movie.
I am too. Now we'll come to. We're coming up to him, but so Tori Nichols, she finally got a payoff. She got to go be the ass kicker and beat Zara's ass. I loved her comeback. I thought it was great, and I loved Robbie's speech where he's just like, "I just want to say I love you," and that was it. Nothing special. Love that.
And Mary Mauser acting aside, like, I really liked the Mary Mauser Peyton List coming together, those two characters with Tori and Samantha, and having Samantha help her train.
Yes,
to like kind of put their differences aside from earlier in the series. I thought that was really nice.
I'm glad it was Tori, because I can buy Tori beating Zara's ass. I would not have been able to.
Oh, God, no.
Would not be able to see Sam do
that. I would have been like, Zara, put her down.
Yep. Finish her. So then you got Ralph Macchio, Daniel LaRusso. You know, some people give a lot of grief about his acting. I do think he's rather milquetoast is the term I would use, but I also think that's the character. He's always been kind of a, you know, nice guy. He's kind of playing the character that the hand he was dealt, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, in Outsiders and My Cousin Vinny and a few other things he's been in. Like, when I see Ralph Macchio, like, I'm always going to see Daniel-san.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is, like almost like Ralph Macchio doesn't even exist, right? Daniel exists, and Ralph Macchio is the character. That's how much this character has been imbued in his life.
The one thing he can't do anymore is the actual karate. I'm sorry, Daniel-san. he's in his 60s. I mean, come on. It's too much for him, I think. Can you believe he's in his 60s, by the way?
I know, it's crazy.
He is not a young man, but he is still doing it. He's still getting it done. So good for him. All right, so then we come back to my favorite character of the show. Is it yours? Is he your favorite character of the show?
I mean, he is the show.
Okay. So William Zabka, you got Johnny Lawrence finally grows up. Finally, it only took like 63 episodes before he finally got there. Grows up, gets his dojo back, gets his mojo back, and then proceeds to do something that surprised the hell out of me. They showed him actually scared for once. Like, he was legitimately afraid of going up against this dude, and rightfully so, because, you know, he's a badass.
He's got his ass kicked in part two.
Yeah, him. Yeah, man.
Over shrimp.
You know what? It happens, right? It happens. And Louis Tan... I believe he's a son of a stuntman too, so he's got a lot of martial arts training in his background, who plays Wolf. It's a great fight. Now, I think William Zabka does have martial arts training. He's getting older too, so I don't think he's as fast as Louis Tan is, but I think they cut it really well. I think they added to this very, very sharply. What did you think about his final redemption arc, that he finally gets to do what he's set out to do, and also he gets... Daniel-san in the freaking Cobra Kai gi, which I never, ever, 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 ever expected that to be part of the show. I just assumed he would refuse.
I think it was you with the inspiration when you interviewed him that you had the Miyagi gi with the Cobra Kai t-shirt underneath.
He liked that.
They took your idea.
Yeah, for people that don't know, I guess I should, you know, since you brought it up, you know what I'm saying. I have met both these guys a few times, actually. Met them in South by Southwest when we had to hang out before we went to C2E2, so we could pre-plan that. I moderated a panel. Got to meet them, and I wore a Cobra Kai shirt and a regular gi over top of it with a Mr. the Miyagi-Do bandana. And when I got there, you know, Ralph Macchio was like, hey, I love the getup, that, because I wasn't sure that that was going to fly because I didn't tell them ahead of time. And I thought for sure they're going to make me change, but they loved it. And except for William Zabka, you know, he's like, whoa, 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 where's Cobra Kai, man? And so I pulled my shirt open almost like Superman. He goes, all right, I'll let that slide. And if you watch the video, you know, he comes out, when he first comes out, he comes out like he's going to kick my ass when we did the panel, like as a joking way. And it was pretty funny. They're good guys. They're very good guys.
Yeah. I'm glad that got to be part of your story. And
this is my truth.
Having this show come back. And it's weird to remember that this was a YouTube series.
YouTube Red.
Season one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm so glad, and then so became glad a that juggernaut. Netflix picked it up and kept it going, because I couldn't imagine this staying on YouTube for six seasons.
I think really that's really what made it go wild. Because if you remember, the first two seasons were on YouTube, and then the third season went to Netflix. And then that's when it just blew up. It just absolutely blew up. And then it became like the most popular show on Netflix, it seemed like, outside of Stranger Things for a while.
Yeah.
But I do think it ended at the right time.
Sure. And I just remember like all the fight sequences over the years. The school sequence at the end of season two.
Oh, where he lands on his back.
Just so brutal. That yeah. entire sequence, the one camera shot the entire way through.
That was good.
Just a lot of good in this series. A lot of good TV, a lot of good acting, a lot of good karate, a lot of
characters.
Good callbacks. Elizabeth Shue comes back for a couple episodes.
Everybody like, but Hilary Swank, who apparently did not want to come back. She chose not. They did invite her. I guess she said no.
Yeah. But
she's got two Oscars. She's like, I'm not going on this cheesy ass 80s TV show. But how did you think of Johnny's arc ended? Okay, so I absolutely loved it. I love that he got it back. I love that he got his moment, his redemption. He won the trophy. I love the respect Wolf showed him reluctantly kind of after the fight. Ralph Macchio being there for him, giving him the good advice, you know? And my favorite part.
Johnny actually playing defense for the first time.
That's ever. My favorite part. That was my. And it took me a second. I had to rewatch, because after I watched the fight, I'm like, God, that was badass. I'm like, God, I want to watch that again. And it was really subtle, like how he just turns around, looks at him and goes, okay, I got to listen this time. He's doing the same thing that, you know, the whole like doing a whole lot of hoopla oola. And I'm going to charge into him like I normally do, because he's always running into the fight. And instead, I'm going to back up. I'm going to play defense for once. And I love that he actually listened for the first time, I think, in the entire show. Like, he actually paid attention.
Which is like a redeeming arc for Johnny. And in the same moment, it's also Daniel has become the master.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. And it also, I mean, it showed that they both finally understood and appreciated each other's strengths, you know, as well as they understood their weaknesses. Like, this is what real friends do. They accept, okay, you and I are not alike in many, many ways, but I appreciate what you do, and vice versa. Like, that's what the relationship came to. And it was beautiful that they pulled it off.
The lives are intertwined forever.
Shocked me. They pulled this off.
Especially if Miguel and Sam end up getting married at some point.
Oh, stop. He can do better. He could do better. Is Zara free? Cause honestly, I mean, you know, if you can, just saying. She's legitimately kick ass.
Legitimate.
So what did you think? Ultimately, we got the finale. You got a little return from Stingray, which I thought was fun. I mean, he has to leave because his mom called Meatloaf or whatever. You got a wrap up of every major character. I think we've talked about all of them. Is there anything like about these final episodes that really we haven't talked about that really you think's worth mentioning?
Just how long it took to get here. Should have been done much faster.
You think it went on too long?
Yeah, season six was, yeah, the three-part thing was just, it was poor planning on Netflix's part.
You think this should have been 10 episodes?
10 episodes, all drop at the same time, or do a weekly release just to get the hype.
I don't think Netflix is going to go back to weekly. I think that's their whole model.
Every other streaming service is doing it, and it actually keeps me locked in and paying. I'm just saying.
What, to them?
Yeah, like I'm watching Paradise on Hulu. Like, I got to, covers 2 months. I got to pay 2 months subscription at a minimum to see, you know, all of Paradise.
Fair enough.
Or wait till it's done and binge it. But then like people are talking about it. I like what they do now where it's like you drop two or three to get like that, you know,
get the
2 hour movie premiere of the week kind of thing.
Sure.
And then you do the weekly after that. Cause it keeps people talking about the show.
The final shot. This is after the credits. When you get Johnny saying, hey, you're going to go to Miyagi-Do and you're going to listen. You're going to learn some of that sappy defense stuff, but really we're here to kick ass. So I love that he's still who he is through and through. And he calls the kid Four Eyes. Like, he hasn't stopped being a dick. It's just who he is. I love that they kept that character through and through. And then the ending where they're sitting at the table and you get, did you see the Back to the Future reference? Did you catch that? Where you have the show, those are the showrunners, two of the showrunners, joking about having a Back to the Future TV series, which is funny. But what did you think?
I mean, they did really great with this. I would not be upset about that.
I think the world would hate that. But their final shot, you get LaRusso like reminiscing about, you know, Mr. Miyagi one more time, and then trying to catch the fly like old times, and then Johnny just kills it and just says no mercy, which is great. I thought that was the perfect way to end this, honestly.
So good.
So overall, I mean, is this a show like you would watch again? Are you glad they did it? Do you feel like it really tickled your fancy? What?
I don't think I have to go back and watch it, especially because it's six seasons. It's a lot of Cobra Kai.
Most of the first few seasons are only a half hour, though.
Yeah, they're real quick watch, but still, it's an investment, and I enjoyed it through and through. I really am excited to see what happens now in May with the new movie that's coming, where Daniel and Jackie Chan get together and bring that all into the whole. Like, cause we didn't think the Jackie Chan Karate Kid with Will Smith's son was part of the universe. We thought it was like a reboot or completely outside. So for them to bring this movie together, to have Daniel show up in the movie, now puts it in the universe, and it's 3 years after the events of this. Like, I'm curious to see, like, will they actually reference Cobra Kai at all? Is Johnny still doing Cobra Kai 3 years later? Like, does Cobra Kai come into the mix at all in the movie? Does Johnny show up in the movie?
I'd love to see. What do you want to see going forward? Do you want to see a Cobra Kai movie? I'd love to see a Cobra Kai movie is what I would love to see.
I don't know what you would do, though. I mean, I was really surprised at the fact that they went back to the well to go get people from two, people from three, bring the series forward, do new things. I mean, if you're going to go and like follow the kids, like Miguel goes to college and there's some karate thing at college. Like, I never knew I wanted this and I enjoyed it. So never say never. But right now, I think it's a good thing to put in the vault and bring it out maybe in 15 years.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because we don't know what if the movie ends on a fantastic, super duper, like really great high note, it could be a really great conclusion to a franchise that you never touch again.
Well, to me, they're separate. Like, they're completely separate as far as I'm concerned. What I would like to see...
Well, the universe as a whole.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. But I would love to see more Johnny Lawrence. I mean, it doesn't have to be karate based. He's a character I love to watch. William Zabka's a great guy, and he's an easy watch. I think he's shown that he's a much better actor than anyone ever gave him credit for. I think he's actually more of a character actor, but he's done a great job, and I'm hoping we get to see more of him in some form. It doesn't have to be this, but just some form, maybe on Netflix or somewhere else.
Oh, I got it.
What?
We're going to, you know, because we're getting up in age, right? You let it sit for maybe another 5-10 years or whatever. And you have Daniel and Johnny now that they're friends, and we revive Grumpy Old Men.
I would watch it. Why not? The show's the most fun when those two are together, right? They're playing off each other. Yes.
Yeah, when they're fighting, the when they're laughing, when they're hanging out, when they're killing bonsai trees, whatever. Like,
when he's together. When Johnny's making fun of Daniel-san, that is the best part of the show.
For sure.
Not the karate, because honestly, sometimes the fighting was like, what? So-and-so would not last this long. They just wouldn't.
Still the best one when when Daniel gets in that fight at the sports arena and like Johnny's nowhere around. And then Johnny's like, no, be here.
I was like, I went back and started watching it from season one again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, kind of like, you know, before I go to bed, I always put something on and watch 15, 20 minutes or whatever before I go to bed. So I started all over and I'm like, it works, man. It really, even though it was on YouTube, it was a good show. It was a good show from the get go. Like from the start, it was a good show.
It was.
I'm going to miss this one. This is one of those where it really... When it was over, I was really sad, which is funny because I kind of had put it to the backside of my head because of the way that the release was working out. And I just kind of forgot about it until it came out, honestly. So yeah,
this and Stranger Things, I think, are the things that I've only sat down and like watched dedicated time for the weekend.
That's going to be hard to watch this year if it actually comes out this year. Yeah.
I want to see the Stranger Things finale in a movie theater.
Me too. Me too. We talked about that. That would be awesome. Yeah. We should get together and watch the finale if it's just on Netflix, though.
Yeah.
If we can wait that long.
Do like a whole meetup somewhere.
We should have like a whole big thing. We should do it. I don't know if it has to be a hoe meetup, but we get some hoes together.
Yeah.
Meaning,
sure, we got some friends at a theater somewhere that can rent out a theater for us.
Oh, that'd be fun. Well, this has been fun, man. Anything you want to say about Cobra Kai in closing?
If you haven't seen it, see it. It's totally worth the watch. I'm curious, like, to hear from all of you, the fans. If you did watch it, like, were you a previous Karate Kid fan and then are just here for the nostalgia factor? Or was Cobra Kai your first introduction and you've gone back and watched the movies from the 80s and 90s? I'd love to hear, like, what your Karate Kid experience has been with the show.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Devin for finally telling old Kenny Payne that she's the one that dosed him. You know what I mean? Made him shit his pants.
Yeah, yeah.
About time. About time. It was the right thing to do. I'm just grateful this show existed. I'm grateful to you. You're the reason I got to moderate that panel. You suggested me for it. And that was a fantastic experience. I got to dance with Martin Cove and we got to screen obscenities into the air after we were both intoxicated quite a bit. I got to hang out with William Zabka and have a few old fashions and then moderate the panel, which was an absolutely fun time. And I'll always remember that. I've told this story before. I'll tell it again because I just want to tell people how nice Ralph Macchio is. They were done with the panel. Their publicist was telling them to go. He had to go do signing somewhere else and they were rushing him away. But he had promised me before the panel, we would do a picture after together. And by God, after they were starting to go down the hallway, he stopped them and said, no, we got to get a picture. We got to do a picture. And they were telling him, no, we don't have time. He's like, I told him we're going to do a picture. He just did this for us. We're going to do this. And he did that and he did not have to. So I will always appreciate that. And that shows, you know, how much he appreciates fans of this franchise.
Yeah. We'll find the video and we'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah. There you go.
For the watch, just to see Aaron in his pajamas.
I'll have it in this post for sure. You can watch the original panel if you choose. All right, Trey. Well, thanks for joining me. And thanks for joining me on this ride. This has been fun.
Yeah, good times.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And remember, the next time you go to a theater or stream Cobra Kai comfortably from your couch, again, like I have, I've watched the final three episodes 4 times. I'm not ashamed of it. Buy popcorn. Seriously, 4 times. Cobra Kai actually never does die in my house.
He's just getting out the protractor and, like, looking at the cigar butt and see, like, is that really how that flies?